The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Josh Pick is the chief investment advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested. Welcome to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. Every week, Josh will teach you ways to help manage risk and protect your retirement income in the new economy. The primary focus at Aptus Wealth is to provide flexible planning strategies that can efficiently achieve your long-term retirement goals.
Welcome to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. Thank you so much for taking time today to listen to our show. We know you have lots of choices, so we are incredibly grateful that you have chosen us. If you'd like to schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk, you can call Josh at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. And besides this show every week, you can also join Josh every Monday at 12:30 p.m. with Bruce Hooley. They talk Money Mondays every week right here on 98.9 The Answer. Josh, with everything that has changed in the past few years, weeks, months, there's probably a lot of people new to investing and looking for financial advice or a financial advisor. What is your advice for them in picking a financial advisor?
Well, there's no perfect system, but I think that there are some pretty easy key indicators or at least criteria that I would look for if I was picking a financial advisor for myself. And the first one we've talked about a lot on the show, and it's a very large, obvious one in my opinion, but make sure you work with a fiduciary as opposed to a broker. And I say that with this caveat, there are plenty of brokers out there that I'm sure are incredibly ethical, doing great things and are tremendous, resources and advisors. However, there are some differences between a broker and a fiduciary, and a broker is working on commissions and has certain levels of suitability that they have to adhere to. And then a fiduciary works on a fee-based structure and a much more rigorous level of standards as far as what they, how they invest your money. Predominantly, these are kind of some buzzwords, but if you work with a fiduciary, they have to do what's in your best interest, where a broker has to only do what is suitable for you. And the easiest kind of metaphor I can think of is if you lived in Florida and you needed new tires on your car, a broker could sell you snow tires. As long as they fit your car, they're certainly suitable for your car. They're not hurting you by selling you snow tires, but I think we could all argue that it's probably an unnecessary expense that you don't need in Florida. A fiduciary, on the other hand, would have to not only sell you or place you, invest you in the tires that make the most sense for your car, but would have to do some due diligence on what's the least expensive price we can get on the same tire. Does it fit your needs, et cetera? It has to be in your best interest. So that's one very, very easy criteria that you make sure your advisor that you're speaking to adheres to. Now, from there, you know, if you're going down the fee-based path, the next logical one would be, what are your fees? Are you working on a flat fee? Is it a certain percentage? Is it graduated? Meaning as I get more and more money with you, does my fee go down at certain breakpoints? If I invest $10 million, do I pay the same fee as somebody who invests $100,000? But understanding their fee structure and making sure it falls in line with kind of the overall environment. And people oftentimes ask, you know, what should that fee look like? Well, in general, those fees range from the low side, usually not much lower than 50 basis points or a half of 1%. Typically, to get to that level, you're going to have a lot of assets under management with that particular money manager. And then on the high side, you'll see people go all the way up to 2%. But as a general rule of thumb, I would say if the fee structure is somewhere around 1%, that's pretty common across the industry. So if you have an outlier, either top or bottom, that could be just cause for question or concern. Does this particular advisor give clear and straightforward answers to all the questions that I have? Do they answer my questions in a way that I can understand? And at no point do they belittle me or at least give me the impression that I'm wasting their time with my questions. The purpose of a financial advisor, investment advisor, whatever buzzword you want to use, is to facilitate you along the process of reaching your goals and educate you on the decisions that you're making and why. And if you feel like at any time they're talking above you or not giving you that education process, then you're really entrusting entirely in that person, which isn't a bad thing, but entirely trusting in that person and not necessarily understanding why collectively you're making the decisions that you are. So I would run away from that belittling type of talking down to situation. And then, you know, lastly, just to keep this in a reasonably short explanation, would be what designations or focus or where do they really predominantly operate in the world of financial advising? In other words, do they focus all their energies on planning for college? Do they focus the majority of their energies on retirement planning? What is their pool of clients look like? You know, do they work predominantly with 20 and 30 year olds, or do they work predominantly with 60 and 70 year olds? And it does not mean that a general practitioner, if you will, can't do a good job for you. However, there are certainly different challenges that apply to somebody in their 60s, 70s, and 80s than applies to somebody in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. So having somebody that is in the general area that you wish to participate in, and maybe even has designations pointed towards that direction, meaning if you want to speak with somebody specifically about retirement planning, you probably want somebody who's a, you know, retired income certified professional or somebody who's a CFP or has one of those designations that applies more towards retirement planning. But if you were focused purely on insurance, it might be a completely different designation that would be helpful in making your decision. But at the end of the day, Diane, it all comes down to, do I understand what they're telling me? Does it make sense? Am I paying a fair and reasonable price for this advice and assistance? And does the person I'm speaking with have the necessary expertise to get me to where I want to go?
And what about a referral system? Is there a Yelp for financial advisors? And how can you find out if someone's a fiduciary? Should the public start first with, are they a fiduciary and just ask them? Or is there somewhere, a website we can go to verify that?
Yeah, well, both. I think, you know, as it is with, if you needed somebody to fix your roof, getting a referral is always a helpful thing. If you have a friend or somebody that you trust that's had a favorable experience with somebody, that's a good place to start. But beyond that, there is a way to look up everybody who's licensed in this space. And you can literally go to BrokerCheck, I believe it's .org. But if you just Google, you know, investment advisor lookup, that will tell you how they're licensed, how long they've been licensed, whether or not they've ever had a, you know, a complaint filed against them or they've ever done anything wrong, all the way down to whether or not they've filed for bankruptcy themselves, which I think would be, you know, a helpful thing to know about your retirement planner. If, you know, they're not necessarily the greatest with money, you know, maybe they have a reasonable explanation, but nevertheless, it'd be helpful to know these types of things. So I would start there, and that will tell you whether they're a broker, whether they're fiduciary, and all these other things that go along with it.
And you're a fiduciary, correct?
We are, yeah. I'm a fiduciary. I've been licensed a really, really long time, never had a complaint against me. So, you know, it's a pretty boring lookup, but nevertheless, there's been some other people who have said, you know, I am looking at this other person. I said, well, look, did you look us both up? You know, just to rule something out. I mean, I'd hate for you to, you know, pick the person who's going to install your floors in your house and you find out that he's taken 37 different people before you for money. So at least this would be a good way to look it up. And we found some, you know, sometimes some not so favorable returns on other people. So it's a good place to start.
And what do you specialize in?
We're in the retirement business, predominantly. Does that mean that we know nothing or don't have a level of expertise here in other areas? Of course not. But once we reach that, you know, nearing retirement. So think of people that are in their 40s, 50s, late 50s, early 60s. They're starting to get a little bit closer and closer to retirement. And then really, as they enter in those first years of retirement, there can be a lot of mistakes made that are ultimately very difficult to recover from. And there's also some significant impacts that can be made in the way of estate planning, tax planning, et cetera. So it's not necessarily that we think that's the best space to operate in, But I think in that 10 year leading up to and 10 years immediately following retirement is where arguably the biggest impact can be made. So that's where we focus the lion's share of our energies.
Josh's number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. And this is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Peck. Josh, it seems like there's quite a diverse spectrum of financial advisors, fiduciaries to advisors who sound essentially like salespeople who can kind of scare you into investing in their products and take home a hefty commission. You talked a little bit about that. How can investors make sure they're putting their savings in trusted hands?
Well, I think kind of expanding upon what we just got done talking about, maybe adding some additional pieces of the conversation that you might have that would be dead giveaways to me that it's cause for concern. And one would be these kind of triggered phrases that sound way too good to be true. Like, well, if you go down this path, you're going to, you know, fall into gloom and doom for the rest of your life. But if you go down this path, you're guaranteed to win. The word guaranteed in our space is a word that creates cause for concern. Now, are there investments that are, you know, for all intents and purposes, guaranteed? Sure. If you put 100 grand in a savings account in the bank, for all intents and purposes, it's guaranteed. But even then, it's not 100% guaranteed. That's about as close as it gets. But very rarely will you see investments that have the word guaranteed attached to them. Second thing I would be very cautious about is if you hear rates of return that seem way out of line with historical averages. Now, does that mean that, you know, certain money managers have not outperformed their respective indices or their respective market over a longer period of time by, you know, a significant margin? No, that's absolutely true. It happens all the time. But by significant margin, I would use things like, you know, the market as a whole has averaged 9% and we've been averaging 11 or 12 maybe is within reason. But I've had folks come in and say, well, I met with this other person. They said guaranteed 3% every month. You know, if you start hearing these outlandish claims where we're going to get a guaranteed rate of return that is far beyond anything you've ever heard of before, be very, very cautious. And then, you know, lastly, I think any advisor that you look that you speak with should not do what I would call a sales funnel. And sales funnel is something that every advisor's been taught, every salesperson's been taught, and that is, you know, let's find out what the need or concern is. Let's sometimes give people a lot of fear by not making that decision. And then let's get them down to the features, functions, benefits of our particular product down into a funnel. While there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, I think a much better approach, again, returning to that educational process of how does one invest and feel comfortable as a client with their decisions in the long run, it has to be educational. It has to be a level of understanding, not just being sold a product. You need to compare investments net to net. And what I mean by that is, you know, let's say that you had an annuity contract that was a 5-year annuity contract that worked much like a CD. However, that particular annuity contract, when the 5 years was up, because of your age, if you pulled the money out at the end of that 5 years, you had to pay a 10% penalty on your gains. Well, one could then conclude that that is a terrible scenario. Who wants to pay 10% of their gains back in a penalty? Well, it depends on what you're comparing it to. If that particular contract was returning 5% a year, even with the 10% penalty, that's 4.5% a year, right? So if you're comparing it to a CD that's only paying 3, even on the surface, the word penalty sounds terrible. It's actually arguably a better scenario for that particular net-to-net comparison. So I think it's important that we stay away from outlandish claims, that we make sure that people can explain things in very simple terms to us, but at the same time, they take the time to educate you so that you can make more logical decisions down the line by comparing things net to net so that you know when you made a decision, it was the right one and not the one that you were sold. I think that's very, very critical in this process of what I would consider to be empowerment in understanding what you're doing, why you're doing it, and then feeling comfortable with your long-term financial picture.
And when people call your office, Josh, you take them through the Aptus Blueprint process. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the Blueprint process is essentially just that. It's an educational process to get you more comfortable with the decisions that you make so that you don't live the remainder of your build-up to retirement and then through your retirement years full of worry. So in meeting one, we're simply just understanding or trying to get an understanding about you, what you've been doing up to this point, and what your goals and objectives are. And meeting number two, we're simply going to take that information and we're going to analyze it. If you continue doing what you're doing, here's whether or not your arrow is going to hit the target, and here are the risks that we can see that apply to that. Are you getting not as much reward for the level of risk that you're taking, or is there something that could happen along that trajectory that would completely knock the arrow off the target? For example, the death of a spouse, would the surviving spouse be okay? And then in meeting number three, we're going to do our blueprint, which is an actionable plan that shows you how do we minimize risk, maximize reward, minimize taxes, putting as much money back in our pocket as possible, and eliminating as much risk for those unforeseen things as well. And then not until meeting number four do we decide, is this a mutually beneficial relationship? Are we the right fit for you? Are you the right fit for us? And then we move forward. Again, educational process. The only thing I can guarantee through it is you will learn a lot and you will feel more comfortable about decisions you make, regardless of whether or not we're the perfect fit for you.
For those listening, if you'd like to schedule an appointment to go through the Aptus Blueprint process, Josh's number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. You can always join Josh as he talks retirement with Bruce Hooley every Monday at 12:30 p.m. right here on 98.9 The Answer. You can always find this recording at Josh's website, aptuswealth.com. More with Josh Pick when we come back.
If you're concerned about the market and you want to learn new strategies to manage retirement risks, call our office to learn more about the Aptus Retirement Blueprint today at 614-364-7300. There's no cost or obligation, but space fills fast. Give us a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
To create a successful retirement plan in today's economy, it takes a customized, solutions-based approach. At Aptus Wealth Management, founder Josh Pick calls it the Aptus Blueprint, and it's focused on managing risk instead of chasing returns. If you're working with another advisor or simply want a second opinion, put his team to work for you. To schedule a complimentary consultation to learn more about the Aptus Blueprint process, contact Josh at 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com. There is no cost or obligation, but space is limited. To start your plan, call 614-364-7300. 7300 or visit aptuswealth.com.
Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
This is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk, call Josh at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. Josh, let's talk about Social Security. It's always a hot topic, especially in election years. But politics aside, why is there a cap on maximum earnings subject to Social Security withholding?
Well, this is a big topic, and it's a big topic because it's, you know, no mystery that Social Security has some challenges as to how are we going to fix what many perceive to be a broken system. You know, we believe that Social Security, or not belief, I mean, we have proof, even from the Social Security Administration, that we're going to have some challenges in the way of Social Security, that trust fund running out of money. So the question becomes, how do we fund it? And one of the big ways to fund it is obviously through the amount of money that is received from payroll. And as of right now, up to $147,000 of your W-2 wages get taxed at the Social Security level. What that means is on your first $147,000 worth of income, you pay 6.2% in taxes towards Social Security, and then your employer pays 6.2% in taxes for a total of 12.4%. Those monies go to Social Security to fund the people who are collecting. That said, there's a large debate over why is it stopped at $147,000? And on one argument, they say, well, you know, if you're making more than $147,000, your benefit when you retire does not increase. So why should I have to pay a disproportionately more amount of money for no reward? But that's kind of the way the system's already set up. I mean, your first so much of income, it gets more credit towards the benefit that you receive on the back end, meaning that if you made half of $147,000, that does not mean that your retirement benefit from Social Security is exactly half of what somebody who made $147,000 was their entire career. It's probably more like only a quarter more than the person who made $70,000 along their career. So that's the argument. The political challenge that's going on right now and has been going on for decades is how do we raise that? And historically, it's kind of raised incrementally, meaning that every year it goes up by some sort of, you know, hypothetical inflation adjustment. So, you know, 10 years ago, it was probably $115,000, and here we are sitting at $147,000. However, one of the things that President Biden ran on was this concept of changing it to charging wealthy more via what he phrased as a donut hole, meaning that up to, you know, $147,000, or I believe the terms that he used were up to $250,000, which would be a significant increase. You get taxed on your first $250,000, not your only your $147,000. But then from $250,000 to $400,000, there's this donut hole where you don't get taxed. And then any income over $400,000, the tax comes back into play. Now, where is this perceivably, you know, a challenge? Let's just look at this from the independent business owner's perspective. I'm an independent business owner and I make $500,000 a year, let's say. And, you know, that's an additional 12.4% tax on $350,000, which, if we do simple math, means that that's a pretty significant increase in my tax bill without having to politically say I raise the tax brackets. All I did was increase the amount of taxation that higher wage earners have to pay, and small businesses will be impacted the most. But it does not necessarily address everybody, because we could get into S-corps and all sorts of different things. I don't know what the right fix is. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. But I think ultimately, you're going to see this continue to be placed under attack. So you need to start looking at how do I come up with an effective strategy to limit my exposure to this increased tax bill if I fit into those categories. How do I maximize the amount that I receive from Social Security while minimizing the amount that I have to pay in? Now, you know, we could argue over whether or not that's a moral dilemma, an ethical dilemma, a patriotic dilemma, but it's my job simply to show you the numbers and you get to pick what makes the most sense for you.
If a person isn't going to get Social Security because they're making too much money on their investments, but they do decide to go back to work, do they have to still pay into Social Security?
Well, first we'd have to clarify, what do you mean they're not going to get any Social Security because of their investments?
Well, a friend of mine is retired and his Social Security, he actually went back to work. He's an engineer and he works in the media, and Super Bowl keeps calling him saying, we need you here. Baseball keeps calling him saying, we need you here. And he told me that, I said, well, you got to watch your Social Security since I'm hosting the show. I'm learning all of this stuff. And he says, sure. Well, it's already messed up anyways, because my investments, I make too much.
My guess would be that this particular person is under the age of 67, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so therein lies the problem. When you're under full retirement age, which for everybody listening is going to be somewhere between 66 and 67, when you're under that age, whether it's investment, earned income, et cetera, if your investment income spit out enough earned income, which a lot of investments do get taxed as earned income, if you have too much earned income and you're under the age of 66 or 67, then it can drastically reduce, if not entirely eliminate, your Social Security. Once that person crests their full retirement age, and let's just say for ease, 67 years old, they will in turn get back what was taken away. They will get back into the Social Security system and start to receive. So whether or not they're making $50 million a year or $50,000 a year, once they're over full retirement age, they will start collecting Social Security again. So there is no criteria currently that completely eliminates somebody from collecting Social Security. One of the arguments, though, Diane, is that there could be means testing in the future, which would mean if you have $50 million in the bank and you're 70 years old, you might not get Social Security, because the argument is you already have plenty of money. We don't care that you paid in. You already have plenty of money. You don't need it. Honestly, that's the most difficult conversation, I think, to have, and the one that's the most polarizing for sure, amongst myself included. But that is one that's on the docket, but not today.
Okay. This is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk, call Josh at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. Josh, how many of your clients think that Social Security is going to dry up, or people that you talk to? How scared are people of that happening?
You know, it's a very mixed bag, but interestingly, I would say, and I've seen some statistics to point to this direction as well, that not as many people are as scared as about Social Security going away as they were even 20 or 30 years ago. And I think the reason for that is, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, we knew that we were headed down a path that was bad. And we were convinced that it was a black and white issue. We were pretty convinced that, listen, Social Security is going to be around. It's going to run out of money. Conversation over. There's no point in banking on it. And the statistics that I've seen is, you know, roughly one in four Americans felt that, you know, Social Security was going to be around for them back in the mid to late 90s. Fast forward to last year, and about half of workers are very confident that it's going to be around. And I think a lot of that just comes down to political implications and how we've handled things up to this point. There's been many, many discussions and many, you know, mathematical calculations. Matter of fact, if you go to Social Security's website, you can find this right on the website that says Social Security is in fact going to, the trust fund is in fact going to run out of money by 2035. So remember, people are paying in, people are collecting based upon the people that are paying in, but there's a shortfall there, meaning that, you know, we pay in 10 bucks, but $12, $13 are being collected. So that shortfall to pay the people who are collecting has come from a trust fund, because it used to be the reverse. People were paying in more than what was being collected. But that trust fund that's making up the difference is going to run out in 2035. We've known this for a long period of time that it was coming, but now we know exactly when it's coming. By approximately 2035, it's going to be out of money. That doesn't seem that far off anymore. But yet, because it's so close, and because it doesn't seem to be getting the, this is just, I'm guessing here, getting the notoriety, people are coming to the conclusion that we have baby boomers now retiring at an astronomical rate. We have much of the country that is completely reliant upon Social Security in their retirement years. There's no way they can get rid of it. Whoever does, it's political suicide. So as much as I do hear about Social Security being a problem in the financial picture, what I have conversations more about now, Diane, is Social Security going to be able to keep up in any form or fashion, even within reason, keep up with inflation? The biggest concern I have is not whether or not it'll be there. It's how will it be reduced via taxation? How will it be reduced via the lowering of cost of living adjustments? Is there a potential that I won't get Social Security because of means testing? There's a lot of things that people are concerned about, but none of them are whether or not the program is going to be there forever. People are very, very confident these days that the program will be around. It's just, what will it look like?
To schedule an appointment to go through the Aptus Blueprint process, Josh's number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. We'll have more with Josh Pick when we come back.
We'll be back with more at the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick at 98.9 The Answer. Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk, call Josh at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. Josh, what are the most significant differences the self-employed face when planning for retirement?
There's quite a bit of them. I mean, some of the detriments that they have right out of the gate is, you know, a lot of people that work for large corporations, now granted, post-COVID, the amount of matching in 401ks has gone down dramatically. But certainly if you work for yourself, you can have a matching 401k, but you're the one matching it. So you don't get any of that quote-unquote free money match that people get when they work for corporations. The other thing that I think sometimes we overlook is Social Security as it relates to S-Corps. And I'm going to have to give some background on this because it gets a little bit convoluted. But a lot of small businesses, think of these businesses that might have, you know, 5 or 10 employees, but they're profitable businesses. You'll have, you know, maybe the two partners are making $300,000 a year, but they don't want to pay Social Security taxes, which is what we just talked about. They don't want to pay Social Security taxes at 6.2%. Plus, they have to pay both sides, so that's 12.4. They don't want to pay that all the way up to $147,000. So what a lot of small businesses do is they, whether they're an LLC or an actual S-Corp, they can elect to be taxed as an S-Corp. And when you do that, you have the ability to become an employee of your own company. And when you become an employee, you can give yourself a W-2. And you can assign that W-2 really wherever you want. Now, there is some criteria and huge word to caution. You know, if you're the CEO of your company and you're taking a W-2 that's 10 grand, it would be very difficult to justify that you're paying a CEO $10,000 a year. So you want to have that W-2 certainly in line with what somebody doing that occupation should make. And I'm certainly not giving tax advice right now, but a lot of small businesses do this. They'll say, I make $300,000 a year, but my salary is $40,000. So they're only paying that 12.4% on $40,000. And then they don't have to pay it on the difference between $40,000 and $300,000. And that's a great thing. And I'm sure people are listening going either, yeah, I do that, or, well, why didn't I think of that? That's smart. I mean, there's tons of companies do it. However, now your retirement benefit, your Social Security retirement benefit, is not going to be based upon the fact that you've been making $300,000 a year. It's going to be based upon that you made $40,000 a year. So oftentimes I'll encounter people who I ask them how much they've been making. They'll say, oh, I make $500,000 a year. Well, then how come your Social Security benefit at full retirement age is saying that it's only going to be $1,400 a month instead of like $3,200 a month? Well, I only claim on my W-2, you know, $30,000 a year or so. Well, that can have a detrimental effect from a cash flow perspective down the line. Now, I'm not saying that's not a good strategy. What I am saying is you need to do the math to calculate how and when might I want to alter that to make sure that I maximize the amount that I receive in retirement. And then the next logical thing, you know, much like I said, you don't get that match out of your 401k, is which retirement plan makes the most sense for you, because small businesses have a myriad of options. You could, in fact, do a 401k for your small business. If you're a solo practitioner, or your business is, in fact, just you, you can do a solo 401k, which is a much more cost-effective option. But neither one of those options might be the best option for you. Maybe a simple IRA or a SEP IRA, and these are all different. They all work mechanically different. A simple IRA has required matching for employees, but it doesn't require any administration charges. A SEP IRA has a much higher limit to the amount of money that you can put away, but it can become very challenging when you have multiple employees. A 401k in traditional sense can be very expensive to hold, but a solo 401k essentially can cost nothing. So you can already start to see, as we're going through this, that the landscape gets kind of convoluted and confusing. So it's important, much like everything in life, that you consult somebody that has been down this road before, that can steer you clear of the things that you can do wrong, particularly if you have employees, because that can get you in a whole host of trouble, but also point you in a direction that's most a cost-effective approach as it applies to you, so you maximize your benefit.
And you do that?
Of course we do. Yeah, we have we have clients in this space all over the board. As a company even, you know, I own multiple companies, and as a company, we've utilized many different variants of these options. I've, throughout the years, used SEPs, used simples, used 401ks, even myself, but our clients do the same, and you learn through experience where one fits better than the other. So please learn from that experience and don't make any mistakes along the way. Get it right the first time.
You're listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your own planning session, if you have questions for Josh, if you'd like to learn new strategies to manage risk, call Josh at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. Josh, are there more or less people who are self-employed these days than in the past, do you find?
I think statistically, there's more. And I think a lot of that happened during COVID. You know, the great resignation, or the, you know, whatever we want to call it. But there was certainly a lot of enthusiasm for quitting your job in search of, you know, better pay, more satisfying work, the ability to work from home, losing that camaraderie aspect of going to the office. And, you know, now it's a very competitive landscape, and it's turned even more into a global landscape. So, you know, if you're in the United States and you're competing against not just the United States or not just Ohio for employees, now, since everybody's remote, if you go to hire somebody in Ohio, you're really competing with the entire United States worth of workforce, if not the globe. So I would say the landscape has changed dramatically, and that has pushed a lot of people into the self-employment space. I don't see that necessarily changing. I think that As our country continues to evolve, you will see more and more people start small businesses as technology continues to improve, as the willingness to do business online continues to improve. The lack of brick and mortar necessity will bring down the costs associated with starting a new business. And you'll see more and more and more startups, which I think is a good thing. It adds competitiveness back into the environment. But obviously, it adds to some challenges as well. You know, how do we offer, if we're going to have our own small business and we're going to try and attract employees, how do we offer, you know, top tier benefits packages? How do we take care of our employees, including how do we take care of ourselves after we start this business? You know, understanding how self-employment taxes work, understanding how business structure works. Should I be a LLC? Should I be an S corp? Should I be a C corp? Should I just, you know, be just an independent business owner that files under their own personal tax return? What is the most logical pattern? I think what that opens, while great opportunities, flexibility, and, you know, growth in the economy, it also opens up a whole bag of worms. So hopefully people seek out advice and making sure that they're taking advantage of everything that is available to them so that they can understand which retirement plans, for example, to select, or does an HSA make sense for us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Do you think there are more options nowadays than in the past, retirement options?
I would say conceptually, the categories are the same, but they're ever evolving. Meaning, Roth IRAs aren't necessarily that new. They're new as we look at it over the last, let's say, 100 years. But having Roth 401k options inside of a solo 401k, well, that's pretty new. I mean, that's in the last, you know, decade or so. Looking at, you know, the simplified retirement plan options that are available to employers has definitely improved. And beyond that, the pricing for them has really improved, meaning that while it might have been easy to go and get a SEP IRA plan, for example, the amount of choices that you had in the way of investment options was pretty minuscule. So you were pretty married to, I don't have this robust 401k that's available to me at Nationwide or AEP. I have this kind of like six choice option that has high fees available to me through XYZ brokerage company. That ship has sailed. You can essentially get a SEP IRA today that affords you all, if not more, of the investment options than all of the other options that I already mentioned with some of those large companies. So it has expanded, it has changed. And I don't think people are nearly at the same detriment that they used to be in operating on their own versus working for a company.
What do you favor when it comes to retirement programs for the self-employed?
It depends. If you are working by yourself and you don't take a W-2, you're just purely 1099, for most people, the SEP IRA is probably the most logical solution. If you are a much higher income earner and you are paying yourself a W-2, and you can do some profit sharing options, a solo 401k might be equally as good an option, if not better. However, if you're a small company with employees, maybe a simple IRA works. So I guess, you know, without giving you 47 different examples, I would say it really is highly dependent on your scenario, but there is definitely a right and wrong answer based upon that scenario. And you just need to know how the plans work and how they apply to you.
And you can help people with understanding all of that.
We do it all the time, every day. Happy to help.
So when people call you, you take them through the Aptus Blueprint process. If they're self-employed, then that's what you deal with during the process and figuring out what's best for them.
Yeah, anytime you include that element of self-employed status, you throw in some extra wrenches. You know, there's some areas that we have to combat with, but you also, believe it or not, throw in some added bonuses in the way of flexibility, meaning because you're self-employed, we have the ability to control where money goes, where expenses go, where retirement dollars go. Now, it gets much more complicated because of all the choices that we just talked about. But the fact that there are more choices would lead you to believe that there's probably more options to take advantage of, which is true. Whereas somebody that just works for an employer, we look at the employer's 401k and say, how do we best take advantage of this? But it's not like we can call the employer and say, you know, we've taken a look at this. We don't particularly, AEP, we don't particularly like your 401k, so we're just going to recommend some changes. And if you could just get those done by the end of the month, I mean, nobody's going to listen to you. So you can do that on the independent, you know, business owner side.
All right. To schedule an appointment to go through the Aptus Blueprint process, Josh's phone number is 614-364-7300. That number again is 614-364-7300. Give them a call if you'd like to do the Aptus Blueprint process. If you have any questions, if you'd like to compare your plan and just have him take a look at it and see if his strategies might work better for you. You can always join Josh as he talks retirement with Bruce Hooley every Monday at 12:30 p.m. right here on 98.9 The Answer. We call it Money Mondays. And Josh's website is aptuswealth.com. You can go there to always listen to a recording of this show. We'll have more with Josh Pick when we come back.
To create a successful retirement plan in today's economy, it takes a customized, solutions-based approach. At Aptus Wealth Management, founder Josh Pick calls it the Aptus Blueprint, and it's focused on managing risk instead of chasing returns. If you're working with another advisor or simply want a second opinion, put his team to work for you. To schedule a complimentary consultation to learn more about the Aptus Blueprint process, contact Josh at 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com. There is no cost or obligation, but space is limited. To start your plan, call 614-364-7300. 7300 or visit aptuswealth.com.
Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk, call Josh at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. Josh, some people may have done it during the pandemic, but how much can people benefit from a retirement test run to make sure they're ready for retirement?
I think there's a huge benefit in that, both financially and emotionally. And I don't want to dive down the emotional rabbit hole here, but you know, retirement's a big deal for most of us. It would be a very easy argument to say we work as much, if not more, than we do anything else. You know, we get up in the morning, we go to a 9 to 5 or a 9 to 6, or for some of us, you know, working well into the evening, and then you go and you just eliminate all that. And I've seen the potential issues that that causes, whether it's turmoil amongst the family unit, meaning husband and wives, fighting because they haven't had to spend that much time with one another, to lack of coordination as to what those two people want to do, meaning one wants to travel, one wants to stay home, one wants to go out to eat all the time, the other one just is a homebody. Those issues, while they might be there today, become very exacerbated when there's an unlimited amount of time to do whatever. And then, you know, from a financial perspective, it's a good gauge on, you know, I thought I could live according to this budget, but I can't. I can't even come close. And there's some pretty good ways to do that, some of which we're forced into and some of which we can kind of elect. For example, if you believe that, and I get this one all the time, you know, we can live on $5,000 a month. Okay, well, I'm looking at how much you all are making right now, and you're making double that. And it doesn't look like you're saving the extra $5,000 a month. So where's it going? Well, once we get these things knocked out, then it'll be fine. Okay. Well, why don't you try this then? Live on $5,000 a month before you're retired for a little bit and see if it feels good. So you can do that without actually quitting your job, right? You're just test running it. The best time to plan for all of these types of things is immediately. Plan for it now. Time's your best asset. So if you believe that 5 years from now, this is what I think we're going to do, and you can test run it today, go ahead, because that'll tell you, it'll give you time. You know, we were way off. We need to start doubling down the amount of money that we save so that we can live better in retirement. So I think these test running concepts are great. Like you said, some people got thrown into them through layoffs or right sizing or whatever you want to call it, where one person in the family unit or maybe even yourself got, you know, kind of got your wings clipped during COVID and had to back off on how much you lived on. Maybe that was a test run. Maybe it wasn't. But I'm a very big believer in the value of these test run type retirements.
I like to talk about couples and getting ready for retirement and how most are on the same page or they're on different pages. What's some advice for them?
Yeah, you do always like to paint me into the corner to try and make some strong decisions one way or the other.
I'd like to turn it into an Oprah show.
Yeah, well, you're doing a good job. No, in all fairness, I would say, you know, by and large, when I have people come in, there is definitely a level of unity in their ideologies as to what retirement looks like. They've had the conversations. It's clear that they've spent some time deciding whether or not this was the right move. And my role in this process is simply giving them the dollars and cents, the math, the numbers, the, you know, how do we make sure that risk doesn't impact us, market crashes, et cetera. So I'm really the numbers guy, and they've already ironed out all of that. But for others, sometimes you can tell that this may be maybe not the first, but maybe the second time that the conversation has been had. It's been more of a, you know, shelved conversation where we go, well, we know at some point we're going to retire. We haven't really talked about what we're going to do. We just know that we're getting to that point in our lives. We don't necessarily like our jobs and we want to move on. So let's go do that. And you can tell that one person is saying, I just can't wait to travel. I want to take a trip once a month. So let's put that in the budget. The other person says, I just want to, you know, be involved in my grandkids' lives and I don't want to go anywhere. I want them at my house every single day for 5 hours a day. And the other person looks at him and goes, like with these, you know, eyes the size of dinner plates going, you want kids at our house for 5 hours every day. And it can get a little, I wouldn't say tense, but let's say eye-opening.
Yeah. Well, and even more reason for people to consider this, like really talk with your spouse about what you're going to do after retirement. One might be like, well, I didn't even think we're going to spend any time together. While the other one's thinking, well, I thought we were going to spend all our time together. And you've been working so long and I've been working so long that finally we can spend hours and days just together.
Just staring at one another in bliss,
yes,
right?
Right.
And I think, you know, you can accomplish a couple of these things. One, conversation's great. The other thing, test run, we were talking about just earlier, I think is a great concept to do that. But if there's anything that I can add to that emotional piece of retirement or that how are we going to spend time, it's just simply experience. It's, remember, I don't just sit in front of one or two clients. I sit in front of a half dozen clients every single day. So I've been through this conversation literally thousands of times. And through that conversation and through being just doing this for decades, I've seen what works and what doesn't. And it's not my job to say, yeah, nice try. You think that's going to work, but it's going to be a colossal failure. That's not my responsibility in this. But my responsibility is just simply saying, I understand where you're coming from. I've seen that play out before. And let me give you some of my experience on the way that that works. Or maybe here's some common ground that I've seen work in the past. And again, it's not my job, you know, pointing back to the, you said you want to turn it into an Oprah show, obviously joking. It's not my job to be, you know, the doctor in this role or the psychologist, but I can lend to some experience in how that would work out dollars and cents and hopefully bring people together on that front the same way that I bring them together on, you know, how should we invest? One person is very, very risky, quote unquote, and the other person doesn't want to take any risk. How do we find that common ground? It's very critical in the retirement planning process for both of those things to be accomplished.
This is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk, call Josh at 614-364-7300. That is 614-364-7300. Josh, so we talked about doing kind of a real-life retirement simulation. What are some other exercises that we can do to deal with the emotions that come with investing before and during retirement?
I think it's very important that everybody listening understands that their biggest obstacle, well, actually the two biggest obstacles are discipline, and discipline just simply meaning doing what you're supposed to be doing to get there. But emotions are even bigger, arguably. Assuming you're doing all the right things, you can still absolutely 100% sabotage your growth and the income that you receive in your retirement through emotions. And there have been more studies in my space done on this than probably anything else. You'll hear it called a bunch of different things, but ultimately, and you know, obviously in our business, we try and coin things, you know, with the behavioral gap, meaning that your behavior actually creates a gap between what the market does and what you actually receive. And you'll hear all these catchphrases, but ultimately it's this. When the market does poorly, think 2008, 2009, many people got out of the market because it was just too scary. They had lost so much of their money and they said, I can't afford to lose any more. So they get out of the market, effectively selling at the bottom. Then they say, I can't get back into this. I just simply emotionally cannot handle this roller coaster ride anymore. I'm done. I'll just continue to save. I'm not going back in. Until right around, you know, 2021, 2022, or maybe 2018, or pick your time frame, where they have this fear of missing out. I know I did the wrong thing now in retrospect, because that pain is dwindled. It's been enough time. Enough time has passed now that I don't feel the pain. So now I'm going to get back in. And what's the problem with that? Well, now we're arguably starting to buy in at the high again. So we sold at the low, we're buying at the high. That creates that huge disparity between what the market actually does and what the average investor gains. And I know I've referenced on the show many, many times that concept of Fidelity Magellan Fund, where over a period of time, the Fidelity Magellan Fund averaged almost 30% a year, but the average investor inside that fund over the same time period did less than 4%. And it all is attributed back to this concept of behavior gap, or not being able to handle your emotions. So what are some exercises that we can do to handle those emotions? Well, one, working with an investment advisor that you trust, that can help you navigate these turbulent waters, is incredibly helpful on a myriad of fronts, but not just the front of what are the best investments that I can select and how do I make sure that my portfolio is allocated in accordance with what I'm trying to accomplish and when should I get off the tracks of the market versus stay in. But more importantly, it's when the going gets rough and all you hear on the news is usually some sort of, you know, propaganda nonsense about how, you know, this is the Armageddon. This one's so much different than, remember, they're trying to sell clicks, right? They're trying to sell you watching their show. So the more dramatic, the better. Helping somebody give you, or having somebody help you with historical perspective, with percentages as it relates to dollars, with how do you make your logical investment decisions? Why did we make them this way before? And has that decision-making process changed as a result of today? And helping guide somebody through that equates to a much larger amount of money when you actually need it in retirement. And there have been studies done by many financial institutions to prove that while you may pay a fee to work with an investment advisor, the impact that they can make, not just in investment selection, but in helping you weather the bad times, equates to more dollars in your pocket. So I'm a huge advocate of figuring out ways to keep those emotions in check, keep your discipline high. But the only way that you can do that is through education, both about history and about investment selection, and then designing an appropriate plan that you are committed to, that you wholeheartedly believe in, to get through the difficult times. It's no different than any other time you've had to plan for something where you knew that at some point during that journey, it wasn't going to go as planned. Think running a marathon, right? Anybody who's run a marathon knows that at some point during that first marathon, you're going to start questioning whether or not this was a good decision. You know, whatever, wherever that is, you're going to get blisters. Maybe your knees start hurting. Something starts hurting. If you weren't committed at the beginning of that, that this was worth it, and that the decision was based in logical fact at the time, you won't be able to push through those hard times. Similarly, your plan has to be anchored in things that make sense so you can reference them when the going gets tough, so you don't pull out at the worst possible time and end up being one of those 3% rate of returners as opposed to double-digit rate of returners over your lifetime.
And your financial advisor is the one to remind you of that during those hard times.
They certainly should be. And you, the important part is that you have a level of trust with them, a level of relationship, and you've spent enough time through the educational process that you value that opinion. And you don't view it as lip service of, you know, how often have you heard clients saying, man, it frustrates me when I hear things like paper losses or just hang in there. That doesn't sound like a plan to me. That just sounds like a, please don't leave me as a client. Well, I think really if you look at that, where did the problem occur? The problem occurred in the establishment of the relationship between you and the advisor. In the very beginning, much time needed to be spent to figure out what are the guidelines that we're going to operate under? Why are we doing what we're doing? So that we can reference back to that in times where it gets difficult. Where I think oftentimes when you work with investment professionals, it's one meeting, now you're my client, and then when it gets rough, well, now we start talking all the time. Well, now we're doing damage control, and you're not sure that you completely trust the person. So you need to do it early on. That's why we do the blueprint process. And fortunately, we have very, very few clients that have ever left us in our entire, you know, duration of our practice.
Thank you so much, Josh. That is it for this week. If you would like to call Josh, his number is 614-364-7300. That is 614-364-7300. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with host Josh Pick. Josh helps guide his clients through retirement by managing risk instead of chasing returns. He calls it a blueprint, and you can get started at no cost or obligation. Give the team at Aptus Wealth a call today to schedule your consultation at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300 or online at aptuswealth.com. That's aptuswealth.com. To learn strategies to manage risk in the new economy, join us again next weekend right here at 98.9 The Answer. Any comments regarding safe and secure investments and guaranteed income streams refer only to fixed insurance products. They do not refer in any way to securities or investment advisory products. Fixed insurance and annuity product guarantees are subject to the claims paying ability of the issuing company.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.